Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaja's Meeting with the Kumaras, Text 32. Nata parataro loke pungshasvarta vyatikrama yadatyananyasya preyastvam Atmanasva vyatikramat Nata parataro loke Pumsham svarta vyatikrama Yadadyanyasya preyastvam Atmanasva vyatikramat Ladies, please.
Na
not. Ata, after this. Paratara, greater. Loke, in this world. Pungshaha, of the living entities. Svaarta, interest. Vyatikramat, obstruction. Yad adi, beyond that. Anyasya, of others. Prayastvam, to be more interesting. Atmana, for the self. Sva, own. Vyatikramat, by obstruction. Translation, there is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. Purport, human life is especially meant for self-realization. Self refers to the super self and the individual self, the supreme personality of Godhead and the living entity. When, however, one becomes more interested in the body and bodily sense gratification, he creates for himself obstructions on the path of self-realization. By the influence of Maya, one becomes more interested in sense gratification, which is prohibited in this world for those interested in self-realization. Instead of becoming interested in sense gratification, one should divert his activities to satisfy the senses of the Supreme Lord, of the Supreme Soul. Anything performed contrary to this principle is certainly against one's self-interest. I'll read the next text also, 33. Artendriyarta vidyanam sarvarta panavunrinam brangshito jnana vijnanad yena vishati mukyatam. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. Purport, jnana or knowledge means to understand one's constitutional position, and vijnana refers to practical application of that knowledge in life. In the human form of life, one should come to the position of jnana and vijnana, but despite this great opportunity, if one does not develop knowledge and practical application of knowledge through the help of a spiritual master and the shastras, in other words, if one misuses this opportunity, then in the next life he's sure to be born in a species of non-moving living entities. Non-moving living entities include hills, mountains, trees, plants, etc. This stage of life is called punyatam or mukyatam, namely making all activities zero. Philosophers who support stopping all activities are called shunyavadi. By nature's own way, our activities are to be gradually diverted to devotional service. But there are philosophers who, instead of purifying their activities, try to make everything zero or void of all activities. This lack of activity is represented by the trees and the hills. This is a kind of punishment inflicted by the laws of nature. If we do not properly execute our mission of life and self-realization, nature's punishment will render us inactive by putting us in the form of trees and hills. Therefore, activities directed towards sense gratification are condemned herein. One who is constantly thinking of activities to earn money and gratify the senses is following a path which is suicidal. Factually, all human society is following this path. Some way or other, people are determined to earn money or get money by begging, borrowing, or stealing and applying that for sense gratification. Such a civilization is the greatest obstacle in the path of self-realization. Again, I'll read the translation of the two verses. Text 22. There is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. So here the four Kumaras are giving transcendental instructions to Maharaj Prithu, instructions about devotional service and self-realization, how to perfect the human form of life by the process of devotional service, which ultimately leads one to return to the spiritual world. So that is our real self-interest, to again become situated in our eternal constitutional position in the spiritual world, constantly absorbed in devotional service to Krishna. So the proper use of the human form of life is to engage it in devotional service. The bhakti yoga process gives a living entity the opportunity, even while in the material world, to perform the same kind of activities as the eternally liberated souls in the spiritual world. They are fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness on every level. Similarly, one who engages in devotional service here, who engages his thoughts, words, and deeds in Krishna's service, can be fully situated in Krishna consciousness and can progress more and more in his attachment to Krishna and in development of love for Krishna. That is a wonderful facility which is being extended to living entities in the material world, those who are willing to accept the authority of the Lord and his representatives and follow their instructions. Prabhupada makes the point in the purport of verse 33 that jnana means understanding one's constitutional position, and vijnanam refers to practical application of that knowledge in life. So it is not just theoretical knowledge, but it is knowledge to be applied practically in our day-to-day activities, so that one's activities are all connected to Krishna. Just as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Machchitta Madgata Prana Bodhyantas Prasparam, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from enlightening one another and conversing about me. So the nature of the living being is that he is active. Krishna says that we cannot stop from activity even for a moment. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, he analyzes activity in great detail, because the energy of the soul can be used in different ways in this material world. Because the living entity is entrapped in matter, so he's forced to act through this material body and mind. So as Krishna explains, there are different modes of material nature. And we have some minute independence to decide how we're going to use our energies. Although, at the same time, we're very much conditioned by our previous karma, having taken birth in a particular species of life, particular country, particular family, particular type of body. So we're trained in a certain way and conditioned in a certain way. But still there is some scope for choosing how we are going to behave in this world. So someone who chooses to act more in ignorance, he will generate bad karma. And he, Krishna explains, he'll go down to a lower position in the next life. In this life he will get bad reactions, and in the next life he can go to lower species or lower planet. Someone who acts in predominantly in passion, he'll take birth again in a similar passionate situation, a big city in the, on this planet, like Los Angeles. Someone who acts in the mode of goodness predominantly, he can be elevated to higher planets, heavenly planets. So in this way, there's some scope for, you know, as it were, influencing one's destiny, improving one's karma or making one's karma worse. Human life has that facility. It is in human life, actually, that karma is generated. When the living entity goes down to lower species, he doesn't generate more bad karma. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to come up again. So there's an inbuilt mechanism whereby when he goes to lower species, then he works off his bad karma and gradually he can come back to the human form of life. And when one goes to heavenly planets also, then he doesn't generate more good karma. Rather, he burns off his good karma and eventually has to come down again to the human form of life. So this is a very significant form of life. And therefore one should learn as much as one can about how to use it properly and apply that knowledge so that one will get the most beneficial result. Now, certainly acting in passion is better than acting in ignorance. Acting in goodness is better than acting in passion. But Krishna is not speaking Bhagavad Gita just to teach us how to act in a mode of goodness and get to the heavenly planets. In fact, he says that, you know, worship of the demigods, men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and the fruits are limited and temporary. So the Vedas are, you know, predominantly talking about performing all kinds of rituals to please the demigods and generate good karma and get to the heavenly planets. But Vyasadeva wasn't satisfied after he compiled all the Vedic literatures. And he approached his spiritual master for instruction. And Narad Muni chastised him that you have encouraged people to engage in sense gratification in the name of religion. Pious fruit of activities, huh? Dharma, Artha, Kama. This religious rituals to please the demigods so that one will get material benefits, wealth, and thus one can engage in sense pleasure, albeit pious. Karma Kanda, this is all pious activity, but it is not going to bring real satisfaction to the soul. It is going to keep one entangled in the material world. And therefore, people become frustrated eventually, especially as the body gets old. One cannot enjoy the senses anymore, no matter how much wealth he's got. And therefore, he starts to desire moksha, liberation from this difficult situation. But Prabhupada said that's also selfish interest. Generally, that moksha means to merge into the Supreme, to get free from suffering. Let me become free from suffering. So this cycle of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, although it's pious, it just keeps one bound up in the material world. So that's not what Krishna is teaching us in the Bhagavad Gita. Rather, he says that abrahma bhuvanal loka punaravartino arjuna mamupecha tukonti apunarjanma navijate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, they're all places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode never comes back to this material world. So he's actually teaching us the means to attain his supreme abode and reside there eternally, absorbed in his loving service. And that facility is extended then in the material world. One can also engage in his service here. That means one has to use one's thoughts, words and deeds in Krishna's service, because the energy of the soul is manifested on the physical level, the vocal level, and on the mental level. Generally, it's easier to physically engage in the service of Krishna. When someone comes to the temple, we'll engage him in some physical service, cleaning the floor, cleaning the pots, you know, doing something practical. And then next it's easier to engage the tongue. So we learn to chant Hare Krishna and talk about Krishna consciousness. Controlling the mind is the most difficult thing. And Arjuna, of course, said it seemed more difficult than controlling the wind. But Krishna said it's possible by constant and appropriate practice. So that constant appropriate practice is to keep the body engaged, to keep the tongue engaged, to keep the ears engaged, to keep as fully engaged as possible in the association of devotees in devotional service. And thus the mind, it can be gradually brought under control. It can be engaged in thinking how to serve Krishna and thinking of Krishna. Thinking of Krishna all the time is not so easy, obviously, but if we have plenty of service to do, then the mind can be engage in thinking of that service. I heard a story of Srila Prabhupada in Bombay that a devotee who was engaged in construction, he came to Srila Prabhupada and said that, Srila Prabhupada, I can't concentrate on my japa. I'm always thinking about concrete and steel and bricks. Maybe it'd be better for me to go to Vrindavan to chant there. But Prabhupada looked at him, he said, I also find the same thing. obviously, you know, Prabhupada is thinking of Krishna constantly, but thinking of Krishna includes thinking of Krishna's service. He had a grand vision of how to distribute Krishna consciousness as per Krishna's desire and Lord Chaitanya's desire to uplift the fallen souls and bring them to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada had a broad vision, vast vision, how to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And part of that was to construct beautiful temples like the Mumbai project. I remember once I was in his room in Bombay, and Prabhupada was sitting with his forehead resting on his hand, and it looked very concentrated, and just sitting like that for about a minute. Then he looked up and he said, "Oh, this Bombay project is such a headache." He said, "But it is for Krishna, so it is all right." So that's good to have some challenge in the service of Krishna, to have to tax one's brain how to serve Krishna, to become exhausted in going on Sankirtan or whatever service one has to do for Krishna, 24/7, as they say, to be constantly engaged in Krishna service, and this keeps us away from thoughts of sense gratification and Maya. Prabhupada gave that example of a glass of ink in an inky atmosphere. If you pour out the ink but you leave the glass empty, then ink will come back in to the glass. But if you pour out the ink and you put milk, then despite the inkiness in the atmosphere, it cannot fill up the glass again. So since we are active by nature, we have to be doing something practical in Krishna's service so that we won't get deviated by sense gratification, because as these verses point out, engaging in sense gratification is and using one's time to simply earn money for sense gratification and simply thinking of sense gratification, this is a misuse of the human form of life. It's spoiling the wonderful facility that we've been given and will lead us down into a hellish, abominable condition. So we should take note of this and not risk ending up in such a predicament, because once one goes down into such lower species, it may take thousands of births or even millions of births to come back to the human form of life. So why risk? And unfortunately, the majority of people in human society are on this path to degradation. Therefore, we have to be very vigilant not to get affected by such contaminated association. It's all around. It's very dangerous. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya, our acharyas, always stressed the importance of sadhu sangha, association of devotees. Out of 64 items of devotional service, Lord Chaitanya stressed 5. Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Maturavas Sri Murtira Shadaya Sevan, Shakala Sadhana Sreshte Panchanga, Krishna Prema Janmai Panch Alpashanga. Association of devotees, chanting the holy names, hearing the Bhagavatam, residing in a holy place and worshipping the deities with devotion. Even a little performance of these 5 can awaken one's love for Krishna. Therefore, they are the best of all kinds of sadhana. Sakala sadhana srishta. They are the best. And Lord Chaitanya stressed chanting the holy names as being among all the most important. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that Harinam Sankirtan is the king of sadhana. and all other kinds of sadhana are meant to support this principle sadhana, which is the Yuga Dharma, of course. But to perform that Yuga Dharma, we need the association of devotees. Sankirtan is congregational chanting. That means there is a number of persons involved. The more, the better. So, we need association of devotees. It's absolutely essential, especially in Kali Yuga, in such Kali Yuga city as this. Many sadhus, they go off to the mountains and forests for seeking out a secluded place in order to meditate on the Lord. But nowadays in Kali Yuga, this is very difficult. Even in the forests and hilly places, there are so many materialists coming with their stereos and barbecues and so on and so forth. Even in India. Or in Russia, if you go in the forest, you find so much rubbish there. Beer cans and all that. So we can't find that secluded place. And besides, we don't have the determination to be able to focus our consciousness on Krishna, even if we go to a secluded place. We need the association of devotees to uplift us and remind us of Krishna and keep us engaged in devotional service and protect us from the influence of non-devotees. Lord Chaitanya compared bhakti to a seed, Ramanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Living entities are wandering throughout the universe, but one who is fortunate by the grace of Guru and Krishna gets the seed of devotional service. Mali hao kore bijaropan shavana kirtana joli kore ase chan. One should become a gardener and plant that seed in his heart and water it by hearing and chanting about Krishna. And just like, in that way the seed begins to sprout into a creeper. But the creeper has to be protected. It has to be fenced in by the gardener. So the fencing is actually association of devotees. Especially in hearing and chanting. Therefore, the morning program is so important, morning-evening program, for devotees to gather together and hear and chant together. Also, to go on the streets. Today is Harinam Sankirtan. This is a wonderful opportunity to chant Hare Krishna with the devotees and at the same time give others the opportunity to hear the holy names of Krishna. So all these activities are in our self-interest. We should keep ourselves busy in this way and not fall victim to Maya and risk becoming a tree or a stone. So thank you, Hare Krishna. Any question or comment? Prigupati.
Thank you for a nice class, Maharaj. I have I guess it's a little technical question. In the purport here in this verse, Prabhupada's mentioning that if somebody doesn't take advantage of this opportunity of the human form of life and engages in activities like, for instance, just working hard to make money to spend on sense gratification, then in the next lifetime they'll take a body like a tree or a stone or a mountain, some non-moving living entity. And but elsewhere, like for instance in the Bhagavad Gita, in the chapter Divine and Demoniac Nature, there's that verse where Krishna says, attaining repeated birth among the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually, they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. And in the purport, Prabhupada makes it pretty clear that it's not like a one-stop thing. It's like, you know, it's a gradual, just like Krishna says in that in the translation. For instance, Prabhupada says, it is clearly stated that the demoniac people, life after life, are put into the wombs of similar demons. And not achieving the mercy of the Lord, they go down and down, so that at last they achieve bodies like those of cats and dogs and hogs. And then in a couple sentences later, he says, in the Vedas also it is stated that such persons gradually sink down to become dogs and hogs. So I was just wondering how we can, how can you reconcile these two, what seem to be like, to me, contradictory statements?
That they sink down gradually, or that they go immediately become stones and
yeah,
trees?
it's sounding like in this purport, Prabhupada's saying that next birth is stones or trees, and in this purport, it's sounding like he's pretty clearly saying that it's a gradual degradation.
Well, whatever way, it's a degradation.
Yeah, right.
Could be either way. Yeah. Any comment?
The gradual degradation is...
Anyone like to comment on that?
Yes, yes, Maharaj. The gradual degradation is in the human form of life, because once you leave the human form of life, you go immediately to your next destination. It's not that a cat gradually becomes a germ. There's no downward degradation once you hit the animal species. You only go up gradually. So the gradual degradation is in this form of life, that you gradually degrade your consciousness, and we see it happen in ourselves and in others. That you can be on a pretty high platform, and then by negligence or offenses, you can gradually degrade your consciousness to the point where you're animal-like before you leave this body, and then you go to the appropriate body in the next life.
I think what's being referred there by the gradually is that generally people's activities are a mixture of things. Someone may be pious in one regard, but basically he's just doing sinful activities. So as if you're doing basically sinful activities, you're going to be degraded. But you may be degraded to a more a lower human state until finally all you're doing, because what it says in the second verse you read is that all you're doing and characterized is by earning things to spend on, you know, in other words, you have no tinge of piety. There's no mix there. And at that point, you go, boom, you're down into the animal species. Because if there's a mix, then you're going to be, you know, born in something that's suitable for that mix. So I think it's, ultimately it can be reconciled in that way.
But how low you actually fall down must depend on the degree of degradation in the human form, isn't it? Because... Well, here it's saying that if one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species like trees and stones, but that's the very lowest. Others may go down just to animal species or insect or something, and they don't go so far down.
Yeah, it would seem. Completely devoid. There's some little tinge of something that's moving species.
Any other question or comment? Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveda Bhaktivrinda ki Gaur Premanandi.